they stay there, and they say yeah, and they say there.
The show is, you know the name of the show. It's, I do apologize for that. Unfortunately, there was some technical difficulty. Hi, this is Izzy Weiss. I'll be hosting tonight as the normal host, the regular host of the show, Ellie Gray. The name of the show is The Diehard Ramblings of a Sports Fan. He is unfortunately unavailable due to his love for the Miami Heat, who are currently in a battle with the Indiana Pacers, the very Indiana Pacers that knocked out my New York Knicks. So we have a lot to talk about tonight. We're going to start out with the NBA. The NBA, what is there to say about basketball? The New York Knicks. The Knicks, when the Knicks are playing good, the NBA is doing good. When the Knicks are not, the NBA just isn't the same. Now, granted, I'm a homer. Granted, I unfortunately follow a team that for the past 10 years has done nothing but make us sit there and vomit watching them run up and down the court. Or let me rephrase, not even run up and down the court, at least attempt to run up and down the court and give us something to watch other than putrid basketball. Remember the days when Kurt Thomas was leading the Knicks back in the early 2000s? Yeah, I remember that. Remember Stephon Marbury eating Vaseline and running the Knicks? I remember that too. Even though that was in China, it's still the only distinct memory I have of Stephon Marbury other than him acting like a total idiot. But yeah, again, the Knicks, the New York Knicks, they were supposed to beat the Pacers. On paper, they were a higher seed. Unfortunately, due to the fact that the Knicks do not and did not have an inside presence, they could not match up well with the Pacers. I mean, look at the size of the Pacers. We're talking about Roy Hibbert at 7'2". You got David West at 6'10". Tyson Chandler, let's face it, last year he was the NBA Defensive Player of the Year. But he wasn't even a first-team All-NBA guy. So I'm not questioning did he deserve that, but he wasn't even considered a first-team All-NBA player as far as defensively. And in this series, he was outright destroyed. Roy Hibbert took him to school. Let's be honest. Tyson Chandler is not an offensive threat. The only time you saw him scoring points is when him and Felton had the pick-and-roll going. But let's face it, that was when Carmelo was not on the floor. When Carmelo is on the floor, he is a strictly isolation player. And again, I don't have an issue with that. I don't have a problem with that because Chandler isn't getting paid to score 15 to 20 a night. He, however, is getting paid to block shots, to rebound the rock, and he's getting paid to defend the opposing team's big man. He's a big dude. He's got to get in there. He's got to play dirty. And unfortunately, in this series, he was completely manhandled by Roy Hibbert. And it was pretty gruesome to watch. And when he wasn't in there, you bring in the 6'8 Kenyon Martin. And let's face it, Kenyon Martin, in my opinion, was a big reason that the Knicks went on that run at the end of the season. His defensive prowess, his ability to roll, I guess you could say to pick, to set picks, he just brought a different aspect, like a hard-nosed basketball aspect to the Knicks that unfortunately they didn't really have. Because let's face it, who are the big men on the Knicks? Marcus Camby, who was injured half the year, and when he played, he was, you know, was pretty rusty. Kurt Thomas had a couple of big games, and, well, we had to release him. Then you had Sheed, who played well in the beginning, but really didn't give us anything after the first 20 or so games because he went down with that injury. So again, for the Knicks to be successful, they're going to have to surround Carmelo Anthony with shooters. Now, Copeland and Novak, beautiful, great. We've got two guys that can shoot from the perimeter exceptionally well. Great shooters, guys that can average between 43 and 45% each from downtown. But then you look at the other side of the coin, the flip side. Both couldn't guard a stop sign. So when you have Novak and Copeland on the floor, you're basically telling the opposing team, I am going to now match up with you three guys to five. So you can, relatively speaking, leave two guys sitting on the perimeter, and they're not going to be guarded. They're not going to be defended because these two guys do not have a concept of how to play defense. But that is the type of player that you're going to have to surround Carmelo Anthony with. That is the only kind of player you're going to be able to surround him with, because if you do decide to bring in defensive specialists, guys that know how to play defense, odds are they can't shoot the ball. So what good is a guy sitting on the wing, wide open, when Carmelo gets triple teamed and he kicks it to him, and the guy's shooting 28% from downtown? It doesn't work. Carmelo can't score 50 a game. He can't do it on his own. Unfortunately, I saw some posts of some. I'm going to refer to them as New York Knicks fans. I'm embarrassed to put myself in the same category as some of these people, because some of the things that I read were absolutely heinous. People knocking Carmelo Anthony. He didn't do enough for the Knicks. He didn't do enough. The man practically averaged nearly 30 points a game. Nearly 30 points a game for the Knicks in the playoffs. That was the second highest total of any player in the NBA in the playoffs this year. Mind you, he was the regular season scoring champ. But Carmelo Anthony can only do so much as one player. If the guys around him are abysmal, if the guys around him cannot shoot, cannot score, what can you do? What can you do when J.R. Smith is playing horribly? Frankly, he couldn't hit the side of a barn. This was the NBA's sixth man of the year. He played exceptionally well for a majority of the season. The beginning, not so much, but he turned it on. He played exceptional, not just offensively. We're talking defensively. He was stealing the ball. Again, JR is always going to take those idiotic fadeaway 20-footers. He's going to dribble the hell out of the rock. And he's going to be colder than Ben Gordon in Alaska on a bad day. Fine. Granted. I give you that. He's not going to always be that consistent guy. But when J.R. Smith is hot, there is arguably not a better scorer in the NBA than J.R. Smith, possibly Melo, maybe a few others. But J.R. Smith, we're talking about a sixth man. A sixth man of the year can be the hottest scorer if and when he's hot. But when he's cold, he can go 3 of 15, a la John Starks, playoffs 20 years ago. Need I not remind all of you about that horrendousness that we had to endure back in the 90s. Unfortunately, this series was a carbon copy of a majority of those series in the late 90s, when the Knicks were manhandled by the then Pacers. It's tough to stomach. Overall, the season, I consider it a success. Many will disagree with me because they will say, hey, the Knicks were the second seed in the East. They should have gone farther. They should have gotten to play the Miami Heat. That should have happened. Well, here's the reality, people. It didn't. And it didn't because in the NBA, when it comes down to it, defense wins championships. And the same can be said for many sports. If you cannot play defense, you will not go anywhere. It doesn't happen. And as long as the Knicks do not play defense, they will be another similar type team to the Phoenix Suns of the early to mid-2000s that scored a ton of points but could not defend the ball. So you'd put up 100, but you'd give up 107. And in the playoffs, teams bog down defensively, and they don't let you score. The Knicks did not do anything against the Pacers in that series. Steve Novak wasn't even on the floor. The only guy that was consistent that entire series was Carmelo Anthony. There was nobody else. Who else? Tell me, who else did something for the Knicks? Chris Copeland had a couple of games. Finally, Woodson brought him in. He did a little bit something. But then on the defensive end, like I said earlier, he could not guard a stop sign. So he becomes detrimental to the team. So unless you're down by 12 points with about 7 minutes left, you can't bring in Copeland. especially in the playoffs. Again, this goes back to the same point, defense wins championships. We're going to take a break for a sec, and we'll be right back. Okay, thank you.
Stop now. Keep your hands up, get them in the sky for the homies that ain't making it, my folks locked down. I never went nowhere, but they saying Luda's back. Blame it on that contour, the hood call it Luda Yak. And I'm on this foolish track, so I spit my foolish flow. My hands go up and down, like strippers' booties go. My folks will still be serving.
Back, I apologize for the commercial. Unfortunately, our sponsors, need to get paid. I'm not sure who those sponsors are. I honestly don't much care for them. But back to the NBA talk. I just went through a 10-minute rant on the New York Knicks. You don't want to hear much about it. There's no reason to really beat a dead horse. We consider talking about it constantly over and over. But anybody who understands basketball, anybody who is a fan of the NBA, not a bandwagon fan, not a guy that decides when his team starts to put up points and wins that he's going to start following the team. That is not what a true fan of a team is. Unfortunately, thank God, I do not live in Cleveland, Ohio. And let's face it, those who are from Cleveland understand what it means to be, I guess, to put it in the most classy way possible, defecated upon by their sports franchises. So, if you are a fan of the New York Knicks, or if you are a fan of most other franchises, and you are not a fan of any Cleveland franchises, you shall not hate your life that much. Because if you were a fan of any of the major Cleveland teams, then you would be guaranteed Gan Eden. I'm pretty confident there is a special place in paradise for those who followed Cleveland sports. That being said, we're going to now switch over the topic to the Major League Baseball season, the MLB season, the Major League Baseball season, the East, the AL East, the New York Yankees, the Tampa Bay Devil Rays, the Baltimore Orioles, the Toronto Blue Jays, and of course, the team I prefer not to say, the Boston Red Sox. Who would have thought that the season at this point would have turned out the way that it has? Look at it, from the top to the bottom. You've got the Yanks, you got the Sox, and then at the bottom, I mean, you got the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays, the Toronto Blue Jays, a team that was predicted to obliterate not just the AL East. They were predicted to win the series. Mind you, this is a team that hasn't done anything in years. Not since the famed Joe Carter 3-run shot off Mitch Williams have they even been somewhat of a factor. And yet all the baseball analysts, the big names, were all predicting this team. And I got to be honest, I am a fan of baseball. I consider myself somewhat of a knowledgeable baseball fan. I'm following baseball since the strike season in 94. So that's nearly 20 years of baseball. And having looked at this Toronto Blue Jay team, I was confident they should be able to do something. Even if their pitching is not that great, look at that lineup. Look at the hitting. From top to bottom, from the first seven guys in that lineup, they should have absolutely torn it up. But injuries, horrible pitching, a porous bullpen, not exactly a recipe for success. Then you look at the flip side, look at the Red Sox. I understand that they've had a little bit of a rough patch lately. They have hit that rough patch. They are not playing as good as they have approximately 2 weeks ago or so. But still, look at Clay Buchholz. Look at John Lester. Unbelievable. It is unbelievable how this team has performed. It's amazing. I'm personally shocked. And then you got the Orioles, obviously, in the middle. And the Orioles, you know, they beat the Yankees tonight. They beat the Yanks last night. The Orioles are obviously also a pretty solid team. So when you look at the top, you've got the Yankees at I believe, 28 and 18. You've got the Blue Jays at 19 and 27. Who would have thought it at this point? And then let's swing it over to the Central. The Central, the AL Central, are you kidding me? The Cleveland Indians are 26 and 18. That's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Who would have predicted a team that is starting Scott Kazmir would be anywhere near 500? And yet they're 8 games above it. Obviously, you can say the manager isn't the guy that's playing. The manager isn't on the field. But you know what? Tito Francona, him and Swisher are a great match. They really go well together. They really mix well together. Astrubal Cabrera, the dribbler, he's not even batting 250. And they're playing like that. Look at Justin Masterson. The guy is, I believe, 7-2 with roughly a 3 ERA. Pitching unbelievably. I'm not going to say they're a scary team because they have to prove consistency throughout the season. And let's face it, right behind them you have the Detroit Tigers who, let's be honest, they've underperformed. I mean, we're not going to talk about Miguel Cabrera because Miguel Cabrera is he's basically Hashem with a Louisville slugger in his hands. He is the best hitter in baseball by a mile. There is nobody close. That argument a couple of years ago that I guess many analysts had, is he better than Albert Pujols, who's a better hitter? Let's be honest. At this point, it's not even a contest. It's kind of comparing, I guess, if you want to compare it in Jewish terms, it's comparing Noach to Avram Avinu in Avram Avinu's time. Nothing. No comparison. Justin Verlander is having the worst ERA month of his career in May. He's thrown up a 6.7 ERA, 6.75 that is. He's not pitching to his capabilities, and they're still 5 games over 500. When he gets back on track, you know the Tigers are going to give the Indians a serious run for their money. They're going to, because they are battle-tested. They are a strong team. Their bullpen has to sort itself out, but still they are a damn scary team. And obviously, in my opinion, the most scary team in the AL Central. What else is really there? I mean, you got the Royals who are playing 500 baseball. I'm honestly very impressed with that. Lately, they haven't exactly been good. The White Sox are a couple of games below 500. You got the Twins who are, I believe, 7 games below 5 themselves. The Twins really can't compete in that division. Their pitching is pretty horrendous. They really can't hit either. It's pretty sad. They're going to be the doormat of the AL Central for quite some time. Then, of course, you can swing over to the AL West, and let's be honest, it's Texas, and then there's everything after Texas. The Angels have grossly underperformed. The Astros, as predicted, would be the joke of the AL, possibly the joke of Major League Baseball, and they're 20 games below 500. And we are literally 46 games into the season. That is not a winning formula for baseball. If you want to swing on over to the National League, we're going to look at the National League East. The New York Mets, meet the Mets, greet the Mets, 10 games below, and they stink like the Mets. Consistency is what we know. Every lead we shall blow. Sorry for the singing, sorry for the chazanis. I just had to throw that in there. The Mets at 17 and 27, 10 games below 500. What else did you expect? Now imagine Matt Harvey is currently not having the season he's had. Let's say he's having a subpar year. The Mets can, theoretically speaking, be 15 games below 500. they're 10 games back of the Atlanta Braves, who, frankly, are playing very solid baseball. And I can't see the Mets being a factor in anything. Not until when they spend some kind of money, they actually get something in return. Ike Davis, how is Ike Davis still playing? I'm getting flashes of Mike Jacobs of a couple of years ago. We're talking about a guy that's hitting below the Mendoza line. And we're almost at the end of May. We're almost in the beginning of June. And he is your starting first baseman. He cannot hit. He needs to get sent down because, frankly, he's not performing. If you brought back Julio Franco, who at this point is probably somewhere between 70 and 85 years old, he could probably hit better than Ike Davis. It's very hard to stomach. It's hard to watch. I mean, they brought in Rick Ankiel, let's face it. Rick Ankiel. Need I say more? I actually thought he would pitch. I initially thought that they brought in Rick Ankiel to pitch. But he's going to play the field instead. He's going to play center. And guess what? When your options are Rick Ankiel, Lucas Duty, and some other trashy outfielder like Colin Cowgrill or some other sad, sad player, you don't have many options. But that's pretty much what was expected of the Mets this year. That is and will unfortunately continue to be what is expected of the New York Mets, the team that I love in the Central, in the NL Central right now. I absolutely love them. The Pittsburgh Pirates, I don't know why they do this. You know, at least Pittsburgh has the Steelers. Unfortunately, last year they missed the playoffs for the first time in forever. But still, that being said, the Pittsburgh Pirates are 10 games above. Jason Grilly, the guy's practically a Major League Baseball Zadie, is closing games for them and doing a phenomenal job at that. They're very surprising. I actually want to see them do something. Their payroll is in the toilet. They haven't spent anything on anybody other than McCutcheon. They gave him $55 million. A year or two ago. That's it. But they're winning baseball games, and it is definitely shocking. And obviously, the scariest guy to face in the NL Central would be the closer of the Cincinnati Reds, Aroldis Chapman. Have you seen what this man can do? Unbelievable. And he got burned a couple of nights ago. But still, an unbelievable guy to watch. And then, of course, you've got the NL West. You've got the Arizona Diamondbacks at the top of the division. Actually, nearly in a three-way tie with the Rockies and with the Giants. It's sad to see the Dodgers, who last year picked up those players from the Sox, and they have a ridiculously, ridiculously high payroll, and they are performing like trash. They're seven games below. The only guy that's really pitching solidly for them is Kershaw, and let's face it, Kershaw could pitch for the Tampa Bay Devil Rays of like the mid to late 90s, who couldn't hit a lick. It'll be better for baseball when the Dodgers perform. That's my honest opinion. It would be nice to see them do something other than lose games and spend copious amounts of money. But then again, I'm a Yankee fan, so I should know about a team that spent copious amounts of money that did not put a winner on the field for quite some time. But I am not cynical because, again, I've been lucky. I've been blessed with the Yankees. I've got this. I've had the ability to see them win championships. And there are plenty of other baseball fans out there that are fans of other teams that would die to see their franchise win something. Seriously. It bothers me when I read people complaining about how horrible their team is. It sickens me because that's what you signed up for. you signed up for a franchise that isn't going to perform well on the field. You are destined. For instance, if you are a New York Jets fan, I'm swinging over to the NFL, the New York Jets. Tell me something. When you turn on ESPN, every single week, and it's Friday, and it's the not top 10 plays, and you see some random not top 10 where like a guy falls out of the stands and lands in some girl's ice cream cone, or some guy slips, I don't know, walk into the mound or throws a ball and breaks a window a la A.J. Burnett. And then you see that play going against the Tuchus fumble. The infamous Mark Sanchez sliding into the tushy of his lineman and the ball squirting loose, getting picked up and returned for a touchdown. Does it get any worse than that? No! But you signed up for it. And it sucks. And it's tough to stomach. And you watch at the absolute circus that Rex Ryan has brought to this team. I got to be honest. I mean, they were good, obviously, a couple of years ago. Sanchez, he played decently a couple of years ago. The last two seasons, he's practically led the league in turnovers. And you can't even stomach it because you know that they got to pay him the gelt. He has to get paid money. If this man was not guaranteed the gelt he's guaranteed, there isn't a chance in hell that he would be on the Jets. There is a 0% probability. So what did the New York Jets do to even to light the fires under his ass? They go and they draft Geno Smith. Let me explain something to all of you. Geno Smith may be a talented quarterback, but he is a product of a Dana Holgorsen offense. He is a product of a college football offense. And I do not believe he has the moxie and the guts to be able to play in New York, to be able to play for a New York team. If you think I'm wrong, God bless you. Maybe you know something I don't. But I see an individual who is emotionally unstable, and let's face it, playing in New York, you cannot be emotionally unstable and successful. It does not work. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we'll take some callers, okay? Thank you very much, and hold.
And they stay there, and they say yeah, and they stay there. Cause all I do is win, win, win. And if you going in, put your hands in the air, make them stay there.
Ludacris going in on the verse, cause I never been to.
We are going to take a call in. I am not sure who this is, but let's hear it. You are on the air.
You hear me?
Who am I speaking with, or who do I have the pleasure of speaking with?
Do you hear me?
I can hear you clearly for calling in.
Hey, what's
who is
up?
This?
Hey, it's your buddy Saul. What's up?
Saul, what's the good word, man? I see you were on hold for a little while. Talk to me. What's on your mind?
Yeah, well, basically, you know, I just thought I'd give you a little my mind about sports. The New York Knicks, to say the least, they very much over, how do you say, they overaccomplished, and there's no reason anyone should have expected to do anywhere near what they did. And they're not really the team that they played out to be. They're just not. I mean, they have one superstar and a bunch of guys that, you know, that managed to click, but, you know, they're not really that team that that went as far as they should go. You know, look at teams like Miami. They got two guys that could cut your, you know, that could drive to the rim and cut your throat at any time, you know, and then around them they have a bunch of guys that could shoot threes or take defense and grab rebounds or both. You don't have anything close to that with the Knicks. And I don't even think the Knicks are anywhere near what the Knicks of the 90s were. I think they just got lucky that, you know, they pretty much lived and died with the three-pointer. You know, that pretty much every game they won was a 10-point, it was a 10-3-point or more game. And you just, I don't know, there's no, I feel there was really no reason expecting to go probably even past the first round, let alone into the second round.
You have to realize a couple of things, Sol, and I understand what you're saying, and I'm not going to disagree with you. Many will say that they did overachieve, and essentially they did somewhat overachieve in a very weak NBA Eastern Conference. And unfortunately, the conference has been pretty weak the last number of seasons. It's pretty much been the Miami Heat and then everybody below them. The Bulls obviously did not have Derrick Rose for the season. The Celtics didn't have Rajon Rondo. So, again, they are a product of a weak NBA Eastern Conference. But you have to realize something. The type of team that they have, the type of team that is built, is the best type of build for the Knicks. That is the team that has to be surrounded of Carmelo Anthony. He needs to have guys that can shoot. You cannot put defensive stoppers around him that can't shoot, because if you do that, you're relying on him to score 60 a game and win 60-59. It doesn't work. To surround him, you need to surround him with high percentage shooters and guys that can hit the three ball. That's the only way that they will be successful, and it's unfortunate, and like I said, I agree with you, they somewhat overachieved a weak East, but they were still the number two seed, and we expected them to at least face the Miami Heat. Are they the same team as the Indiana Pacers? Or let me rephrase, as the Knicks of the 90s? Obviously not. That was a hard nose, hit you in the mouth, not take crap from any one team, with Mason, with Oakley, with Johnson. I mean, we're talking guys that didn't take garbage from any. Even Jeff Van Gundy got into the middle of it.
Right.
But that's unfortunately the New York Knicks team that we're going to have to watch as long as Carmelo Anthony plays. That's pretty much weird.
Another point I wanted to make. What on earth happened to the West this playoffs? It seems like every half decent team just lost their best or second best player, from the Clippers to the Nuggets Oklahoma, like all the good teams just lost everybody, and then suddenly, before you know it, you know, they're all gone. The only good team that's even left in the West is the old fashioned San Antonio Spurs. Is there anything anyone could say about the fact that just so many teams got injured all at once? Like, what could be a cause of that?
Well, I'll tell you like this. There's got to be some kind of a curse. I'll even tell you, we actually have a caller interesting. Marv Albert has actually contacted us. Marv Albert would like to give us his opinion on that. Thank you very much for the call, Sol. We appreciate it. That would be Marv Albert. Tell me, what do you think the reason, as Sol pointed out, that the NBA West has had so many issues with injuries of top or second tier players? What is it? Well, you see, the issues that have befallen the NBA Western Conference are very simple. There must be some type of a ridiculous curse, a curse like of the Madden NFL video game curse. Guys have been dropping like flies, and it's not good for the NBA. It's unfortunately very hard to stomach. But that being said, unfortunately, it is what it is. And teams like the Thunder, who many people said that they would be better off without Russell Westbrook, have been proven wrong. Look what they did without him. They were not the same team. They were not that good. And as it appears, the San Antonio Spurs are the cream of the crop of the NBA, the Western Conference. And they're up 2-0 against the Grizzlies. The Grizzlies, a young team with a lot of fight in them, but still down 2-0 going to Memphis. Unfortunately, this is what has happened, but you have to continue to play on and make with what you have, because you have to be healthy. Look at the NBA Eastern Conference, We had Derrick Rose, who did not play this entire season for the Bulls, and the Bulls still played unbelievably well. Imagine Derrick Rose was playing where they could possibly be. You look at the Boston Celtics. They lost Rajon Rondo, arguably next to Chris Paul, the best distributor of the basketball in the NBA, and yet they still fought and got into the playoffs. The point is that injuries are a part of the sport. And so long as there are injuries, you need to have depth on your bench. If you do not, you will not perform properly. Thank you, Mr. Weiss, for having me on, and have a wonderful evening, and tune into the NBA on TNT and ABC7 and ESPN throughout the NBA playoffs, where you'll catch me, Kevin Harlan, Chuck Barkley, Kenny Smith, of course, my good friend Ernie Johnson, and the always intelligent Shaquille O'Neal, and the hated Reggie Miller. Thank you. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Marv Albert. I really appreciate that. Those points that you made, they were very interesting. Just next time that you come on, do me a favor and don't wear panties. I really didn't appreciate that visual. That was pretty scary for me. But yes, that's pretty much where it is with the NBA. That is the NBA in a nutshell. Saul made a very good point. He made a great point. Unfortunately, there have been far too many injuries, and it's frankly you can't really stomach it because it really hurts the NBA. But let's face it, let's be honest. Here is the NBA in a nutshell. It's the Western Conference, and it's the Miami Heat. There really aren't that many good teams in the East, and they are a bit overhyped. Obviously playing against weaker competition. If the Bulls had Rose, if the Celtics had Rajon Rondo, they would obviously be better. But, unfortunately, it happens. Injuries do occur, as we had said before, and it's part of what you expect in all professional sports. Not as much in basketball, but it is what is expected. We're going to take another call. Let's see, who is this? Thank you for calling in. Who do I have the pleasure of speaking?
Hey, how you doing? I'm Jonathan Miklos from Key West.
What's going on, Jonathan? What's on your mind?
You know, I was listening in, and you're doing a very great job for Eli, by the way. I thought I should put that out there.
Thank you very much, sir. I appreciate it.
You were talking about the American League East. And, when you brought up who thought Toronto would be where they were, I did, because it is Toronto, and we're talking about a team that, just like the Angels last year, you're just throwing a bunch of guys together that haven't had a chance to mesh. I know baseball doesn't seem as important, but it really is, especially when you're going from South Beach. I mean, let's face it, they're the Toronto Marlins. You're taking them all from Miami. You're putting them all in Canada. It's a totally different place from the play. How
are
you going from South Beach to Canada?
Wow, I don't know. Let me think. And again, this is no offense to anybody, but if I were sitting on the beach and there were plenty of beautiful women walking up and down in dressed scantily clad, I'd probably hate my life if I went up to Canada and froze my rear off. It would really bother me. Does that have a direct effect on the play? I have no idea. When they played for the Marlins, they unfortunately didn't perform up to task. And let me just tell you one thing. Now that I understand that you are from Florida, I my condolences to what your owner did to the team. And I'll be honest, in my opinion, what he did was absolutely disgusting. It was offensive to the city of Miami. It was offensive to Major League Baseball. And he thinks that everyone is a fool and that nobody saw what he did, that he manipulated the system. What do you feel about that? How do you feel about what Mr. Lurie did to you guys?
Well, thankfully, I was born in the Tampa Bay area, so I'm a Devil Rays fan. But of course, I pay close attention to the Marlins. And what I saw Loria do was the same thing he did to the Expos. I don't know if you remember, but Loria owned the Expos before he owned the Marlins, and Major League Baseball essentially, told him what they told the Dodgers of, look, the McCourts of when they owned the Dodgers was, hey, you got to sell. All right, we can't have you around because you just traded away Pedro Martinez and you traded away this guy and that guy. What do you have left, Vlad Guerrero? I mean, what he did to the Marlins has hurt the whole state because it cost a lot of people funding because the state pays for that stadium. He didn't pay for it.
Right. That's true. The state pays taxes, and they're going to pay a ton of taxes. And he burned that state. He burned the Miami Marlins fans. I mean, thank God, I guess, if you're a Miami anything. Well, the Dolphins are the Dolphins. There's not much to talk about the Dolphins. But then the Heat. So the Heat probably make up for what Mr. Loria did. And, yes, I definitely do remember what he did to the Expos. The Expos were a dream team of players, and he basically disbanded the team. And what he did to the Marlins I still find heinous. And, again, I'm a Yankee fan. You know, I've watched the Yanks spend hundreds of millions of dollars on players, of which some panned out, a majority didn't. And to go back to your point, which I completely agree with, about the Toronto Blue Jays, that in order for you to be successful, no matter how many guys, how many superstars you bring to a team, they need to mesh. You have to play solid team baseball. The teams of the 90s, the late 90s, the Yanks, I'm not going to say they didn't have a superstar, because let's be honest, they did not have a superstar. They had solid players. They had Jeter. They had Paul O'Neill, Bernie Williams. Solid players that meshed together. They had a great, solid pen with Rivera. Sad to say, I'm going to unfortunately miss him. And all Yankee fans who have been spoiled rotten, spoiled since he came into the league and pitched and has been pitching for us all the years that he has, and then it'll be back to a bullpen by committee or probably go out and sign some ridiculously overpriced relief pitcher who will probably perform like Carlos Marmol or Kevin Gregg or any one of the other garbage low-end players. Thank you very much for the call, Jonathan. I definitely do appreciate it. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're not going to discuss hockey because, frankly, hockey... Welcome back to the show. I apologize for the commercial, but unfortunately I had to grab some androdiastine off the counter and shoot myself up with steroids. Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. I thought I was talking to Congress. Yes, so back to the show. I do appreciate the two callers that we had in Sol and Jonathan. They both made very valid points. They both made perfect sense. And not to piggyback off what they said, but as Sol pointed out, the Knicks were a product of a three-point shooting system, which we definitely, unfortunately, have to agree with. And a team like the Blue Jays that Jonathan agreed, Jonathan apparently believed that they would play the way that they have, because even though they're a team with superstars, they did not mesh. And if you don't mesh, you will not perform. It doesn't matter how much money your team spends on players. It does not guarantee success. On paper it does, but when it comes down to it, you must perform on the field. And they did not perform on the field, and they currently are not. So what we're going to do now is we're going to talk a little bit about the NFL and an issue that I had discussed with Ellie Cryer. I believe this was in the last show that we did. We discussed Jason Collins and his big coming out, announcing to the world that he is an active NBA player who is gay. And that was the first time, other than, of course, Glenn Burke, as was mentioned. Unfortunately, it did not have the same type of feel, and it was not used by the media, and it was shut down. But what Jason Collins did was he opened the door for other potential professional players to come out and to be comfortable in their skin. There is a NFL player who is currently unsigned. His name is Brendan Iheanacho. He is a big voice for them, as well as for the gay players, as well as Chris Cluey. And they've said, or at least Brendan Iheanacho said, that there could potentially be four NFL active players that may come out of the closet as of within a year. And let's face it, the NFL is a brute, rough, physical game. So how will that affect the other players in the locker room? Let's face it, let's not talk Chris Culliver. Chris Culliver is a fool. What he said was idiotic, and I'm going to guess one of a few possible scenarios as to why he said what he said or acted the way he did. Again, he is an NFL player, so there's a possibility that he'd suffered serious brain damage, whether in a car accident or getting run over by a player in practice. I don't really know. I have no idea. But the comments that he made were pretty ridiculous. And then there was the tweet from Mike Wallace that I can tell you, and again, my opinion on the matter is that live and let live. What Wallace did tweet was not, I don't believe it was offensive towards gay rights. Was it stupid and ignorant? Yes. But for people to jump on him and to call him a bigot and a racist, I honestly think that that is just a little bit too much. It's not a matter of political correctness. He was making a statement as to that he didn't understand. He couldn't understand what it was and or why, you know, it is what it is. But again, he's entitled to his opinion. It's freedom of speech. And what he said was stupid but not offensive. So we need to move past that. I personally think it will be massive for the NFL, the NFL being the most violent sport, arguably in the world next to maybe rugby. Such a violent sport that a player has the guts and the ability to come out and say, I am an openly gay player and I play such a rough sport. In my opinion, it would be huge for the sport. And it's not about making who they are bigger than the game. It's really not. But who are we to judge? We don't know, at least if you are not a major professional athlete or actor or somebody in the media that is a closeted homosexual, we don't know what kind of internal matters that they go through. That, for instance, and we discussed this with Eli last week, that 2 weeks prior, that professional athletes, what happens after a big game? Where do you go? You go out to the club. You go out to the club, you go to the strip club, you go to the bar, you throw money around, cash, money, hoes, you know, all that. And it's, again, it's, you're sitting there and you're faking who you are, and it probably destroys you inside. It probably makes you feel so out of place. So for a player to come out and say that, and to be comfortable in his own skin and not to live a fake life, that's huge. That is very big, and I applaud those players who do come out when they do. And, you know, the best of luck to them. I really hope that there aren't the Chris Cullivers of the NFL that judge them, but there are the Brendan Iheanachos and the Chris Cluey's who are accepting. And that's honestly where I stand on the matter. Well, we've got approximately 10 minutes left to the show. We currently do not have any callers coming in. I do, however, see, I believe we do have one other analyst Okay, who is that? Oh, apparently it is Chuck Barkley. Why would Chuck Barkley be calling in the show? Hold on a second. Let's bring him on. Chuck, let me ask you a question, Chuck. What is the one thing that you admire most about Shaquille O'Neal? Tell me. Tell us.
Let me tell you something, Izzy. Let me tell you. It's absolutely unbelievable what is going on in the NBA nowadays. And Shaquille O'Neal, that fool's terrible, man. That fool is absolutely terrible. His opinion is absolutely nuts. I don't respect a word that come out of his mouth. He is absolutely ridiculous. Where the hell my Taco Bell at? Come on, man. Bring me my taco.
Chuck, you're getting off point. I'm trying to understand what it is that you respect most about Shaquille O'Neal. I don't much care for Taco Bell or for, I guess for Taco Bell. I really don't need to know about your hatred for him and for Taco Bell. So do me a favor, get back on point. I'm sorry. I apologize. I get so passionate about my food. You know, I was on a Nutrisystem. I lost 40 pounds doing it. It was amazing. But then magically, they put the Dorito Locos in the Taco Bell, and it's absolutely amazing. I can't stop eating it, man. I'm getting huge. I'm almost the size of Oliver Miller. Remember him back in the day? He was a huge dude, man. Chuck. Oh, my. We got to cut him off. I'm sorry, guys. I apologize. Unfortunately, Chuck Barkley, he's got some serious issues with Taco Bell or I don't know, or Shaquille O'Neal. There's something wrong with it, whatever. But then again, he gets paid plenty of money to be an analyst on TNT and sound like an absolute what is the word I'm looking for? Fool, right. A fool. By the way, breaking news just came in. Apparently, and this is for all you haters of the New York Knicks, or let me rephrase that, not haters of the Knicks, but haters of Carmelo Anthony, and said he didn't do enough. Do you know that it has been revealed through an MRI that he had a small tear in his shoulder? That he was plagued with immense pain since the middle of the Celtics series. So he still put up solid numbers. He played out of his mind with an injury, rolling his ankles, getting stepped on, getting slapped, getting pulled down, but he even played with a tear in his shoulder. Okay? So you guys got to, if you are fans of the Knicks or basketball, you have to lay off Carmelo Anthony. It's embarrassing. It's sad to see some of the things that you write. And frankly, it makes me want to listen to Chuck Barkley talk for 5 minutes. Because listening to Chuck Barkley talk for 5 minutes could make a person want to stick their head in a refrigerator and slam the door over and over and just continue till there's nothing left to slam. Ah, Chuck Barkley. God, I don't think I ever want to talk to him again. Okay, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and if you're still on, we will be back shortly. Thank you very much, and hold on.
DJ Khaled, hey, yeah. All I do is win, 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 no matter what. Got money on my mind, I can never get enough. And every time I step up in the building, everybody hands go up. And they stay there.
We are back. I just wanted to congratulate fans of the Miami Heat. I wanted to congratulate you because apparently the game is tied at 92 and it is approximately 4.5 minutes left in overtime. I do wish that I could have Eli on the show. Unfortunately, due to his team, he is unfortunately not able to join us tonight, and I would like to publicly thank Eli for allowing me this guest spot on his radio show, The Dire Ramblings of a Diehard Sports Fan. I am not even sure what I just said, but I would like you to please tune in next week as well. Eli will hopefully be back on the show because, again, we are on at 10:30 to 11:30 every Wednesday night. We will be on till future notice, until either the FCC closes us down, or I'm not even sure what. The point is that next week he will hopefully be back on the show to talk Miami basketball, Miami football, and I guess Marlin baseball, which, well, let's face it, Marlin baseball. Need I say more? Okay, we have approximately 4 minutes left in the show. I would like to leave you all with this thought on predictions as far as I see the NBA turning out. I do see the Miami Heat beating the Pacers in 5 to 6 games. I give that, again, and I say 5 to 6 games because I feel that you got to give the Pacers respect. They play hard. So they should win 1, possibly 2 games. So let's assume that that series ends. I give the Spurs, I do have to give the Spurs the edge. They're obviously up 2-0, so it's not much of a prediction to say that they should win in 5. But I do have the Spurs winning that series. And then, of course, it's going to be the San Antonio Spurs, the ageless wonder San Antonio Spurs, who do not seem to die. They are a team made up of geezers, absolute old people. No offense to you old people, but they are a team comprised of Zetas and a couple of young guys. And yet they still manage to win. They play solid basketball. Sad to say, unfortunately, it is likely the Miami Heat will win that series in 6 games. I do not want the Heat to win, as I have clearly stated. I really don't want the Heat to win. I would rather the Spurs win. In my opinion, Greg Popovich, and in many opinions, is the best coach in the NBA. He is an absolute genius. And I believe that he will definitely coach his team to the finals. And they will meet the Heat, and the Heat will likely, unfortunately, win that series. But bigger miracles have happened. There have been bigger miracles than that. There was the famous Mookie Wilson ground ball that got by Buckner. It gets by Buckner. It did happen. So this can happen if you daven hard, if you daven hard to the Abishter, whatever Abishter that is, if that is the Abishter of Tim Tebow, or if it is the Abishter known as Hashem Yisbarach, it doesn't matter. You just have to pray that the Heat do not win the NBA Finals. We cannot have another year of LeBron James. We can't. We need parity. We need something else. So please, daven. I know it's not Yom Kippur. It's not Rosh Hashanah. I know it's not around that time. In fact, we just finished Shavuos, Matan Torah. But please, please pray that the Heat do not win the finals. That being said, I would like to thank our callers once again. Sal, calling out of Brooklyn, New York. And Jonathan, calling from Florida, giving the show a piece of their mind, making valid points. I definitely appreciate it. And I hope that you listeners appreciated this show. And next week, we are going to have Eli back, and we will do this again, 10:30 to 11:30 p.m. The show will be on Wednesday night. Thank you once again for tuning in. This is Izzy Weiss, and have a wonderful evening. I will leave you all with this music. Peace.
And they stay there. And they say yeah. And they stay there. Cause all I do is win, win, win. And if you going in, put your hands in the air. Make them stay there.
Ludacris going in on the verse, cause I've never been defeated and I won't stop now. Whoa. Keep your hands up, get them in the sky for the homies that ain't making it in my folks locked down. Whoa. I never went nowhere. What they saying, Luda's back. Yeah. Blame it on that.